Hey, Hawkeye fans, Chad Leistico of the Des Moines Register here with you for a solo podcast at the end of the first, work week in June. Feels like a good time because we had Fran McCaffrey on Thursday for the first time in more than a month, about a month and a half. Talked about a ton of off-season basketball topics on our Wednesday radio show this week, which I hope you heard. If you haven't, check out HawkCentral.com. We had a great conversation with Mark Morehouse and Mary Ferentz about a lot of different things Iowa football, but that did not necessarily delve into some of the stuff I also wanted to touch on, the Mike Gary Barta interview, the Hawkeyes game times and football schedule. So there's actually quite a bit to chew on, but let's start with the basketball side of things, just because that's fresh. It was McCaffrey today. As I record this, I guess the highlight kind of came out of the gate. There, Jordan Bohannon returning to practice. Iowa was told was practicing on Friday. McCaffrey jumped in at the start of the call and said, "Yeah, we're going to practice today." So today, Thursday, was Iowa's first practice. I believe it's happening as I talk, and we'll get to some of it later, but Jordan Bohannon might be the only point guard Iowa's got right now. But a good news on the Bohannon front, the health front of things after the bar altercation, the video that's been widely distributed now on social media. Haven't talked to Bohannon. Like I said, he's not quite ready to talk yet. I'm guessing he will be in the coming weeks, but obviously, any questions about whether he, had a real serious injury are probably curbed at this point. I would think even if it was a concussion that there would have been a longer concussion protocol. Maybe not. Maybe we'll find out he had a mild concussion, but certainly he couldn't be practicing with a broken jaw or anything like that. So I think the quote-unquote serious head injury was real. From what I know, it sounded like there was a lot of blood, but we'll let Jordan speak to anything he wants to speak to regarding that at some point. And glad to have him back, and I'm sure Fran McCaffrey is as well after talking to him today, because and I kind of did know of one of these two. McCaffrey revealed that Joe Toussaint had an ankle surgery after the off season. I guess that was bothering him during the season, kind of like the Connor McCaffrey thing, the C.J. Frederick thing, the Bohannon shoulder thing. All these guys, it just stunk for that team. The more you look back on it, that they were dealing with stuff that obviously it's kind of like hockey. You don't disclose that in the postseason. Why would you? Tough break, for that team to come down with so many injuries like they did. And I think Luka was hurting more than anyone realized as well. I mean, just think about every single person on that team, key person, they were injured. And not to mention Jack Nungy, obviously the one that couldn't play with his ACL, or I'm sorry, meniscus. But so Toussaint with an ankle surgery, and Aaron Ulis had a wrist surgery. And neither of those guys were available for the first practice. McCaffrey said both would be really soon. So that's a good sign that it's nothing serious. But the Toussaint one was one I guess I can share now, that when I had my one-on-one with Connor McCaffrey a while back, he kind of alluded to that, just saying that he and Joe were both recovering kind of together, but that was – that needed to be able to report that, needed to be able to go through Fran on that. So that was an off-the-record type conversation. So obviously now that's out there. So, I think it's fine to say that. But did not know about Ulis. And I was kind of curious. He was kind of the one guy, I guess, I just hadn't heard much about. So I just, in the back of my mind, was thinking, would I wake up one day and find his or hear that his name was in the transfer portal? I guess good sign for Iowa that he is, sticking with the program. And, he'll be competing at that point guard spot. He has every right to beat out Joe Toussaint for that starting point guard spot in the fall. But obviously those two guys out just to start this summer practice. And obviously Connor McCaffrey's still out after two hip surgeries. Fran said Connor is ahead of schedule, way ahead of schedule, doing some running in the pool after multiple hip surgeries, and is tracking toward a September return. He initially kind of circled October as kind of the full go time. McCaffrey said maybe September. So either way, obviously Connor's not going to be in, you know, prime shape come the fall and winter. You know, we'll see. But at this point, I still think I don't see a scenario in which he is the starting option at any of those positions, unless there's a lot of injuries on the team. And one of the reasons that I'll get to is because of some of the positive things that have kind of come out about Iowa players, some of Iowa's younger players, particularly the Murray twins. I mean, what a story those two are. You know, obviously Keegan, the highlight there, because as hopefully you guys saw this week in my writings, I touched on it a little bit on the radio show on Wednesday, but Keegan Murray still viewed as a possible first round NBA draft pick in 2022. Now a lot would have to happen for something like that to occur, and a lot of times those projections are based on you know, who's coming back. We don't see who might emerge, what other, you know, underclassmen might, declare after a big season next year. So it's really premature to feel like that's a real possibility at this point, to even think that Keegan might be ready to declare after 2 years of playing at Iowa, where his father played. But anyway, the fact that he is in that conversation is certainly a good thing for the Hawkeyes. I mean, you want to have good players. You want to have players that the pros want on your team. No question about that. Think about Tyler Cook and Joe Wieskamp and Luka Garza, Jared Utoff, Peter Jok. I mean, if he could be anywhere in the conversation of those guys, that's a great starting point. And I do think, the first round talk could be legit. I mean, he is a smooth player with lots of development still ahead. And as I wrote the other day, he just returned from San Francisco, where he was getting trained at a very high level, as was Chris. And those two guys, I think, are going to be tough on the court together this year. I'm very curious to see, does Chris in my mind, I view Chris as an option to kind of play like Keegan did last year, almost kind of get his feet wet on the court, maybe contribute, 7 points, five rebounds, something like that. But McCaffrey said he is an integral part of next year's team, and he would not be surprised if he is a force in the Big Ten along with Keegan. So those two guys in particular, I think, really offer a lot of excitement about this team. Another part about them is that they both can play multiple positions. Chris Murray played a lot of five last year. That's what McCaffrey was talking about today. Five in practice, of course. We didn't see him much in games for the season. He shot 3 for 13 from the floor in just 41 minutes of action. But anyway, Chris was practicing at the five last year a lot. Undersized five. He's about 6'8 and a half, his dad told me, and about 220 right now. Whereas Keegan's just about a half inch taller, 6'9, 223. And those two guys, very similar size. Keegan's righty, Chris is lefty. But you could see a scenario where, hey, maybe Keegan is the three and Chris is the four, or Keegan's the four, Chris is the five. Just kind of depends on where Philip Rabracha and Patrick McCaffrey fit with this year's team. The Joe Wieskamp thing, again, I continue to say keep that in the very, very low expectation situation. Under 10%, I would say, but you never know. I mean, the circumstances change. He might not get the feedback he wants, but at this point, for the purposes of this conversation, let us assume Joe Wieskamp is heading out of the program. So you kind of think about the possibilities there in the front court. And I wrote a bunch of stuff down before doing this podcast. And the front court is so intriguing to me. We talk a lot about the back court. Is, you know, there are questions there. Joe Toussaint, Aaron Ulis, can one of them really emerge as like a, you know, not a star, but a guy that you can just bank on 28 solid minutes a game, bring the ball up the court, run the offense, get guys open, get them shots. That's a question. We don't know that yet. We've seen Joe Toussaint do it in flashes. We've seen Aaron Ulis do it in even smaller flashes. But can they do it consistently? We don't know that. We just don't know. At the shooting guard, can Bohannon be a shooting guard? We don't know. We think he can. He's got 364 three-pointers in his career. He can shoot. But can he be, you know, can he exist when he is the primary shooter out there, when there's not a Joe Wieskamp to distract attention or a CJ Frederick out there to distract attention? So we don't know that. Obviously, Tony Perkins is the other shooting guard option. But after that, Connor McCaffrey, I mean, he could be a shooting guard, but he's not really much of a shooter. So there are questions in the backcourt, but the frontcourt. Sorry, I had to take a little sip there. Is really intriguing. Let's take Peyton Sanford. We don't know what he's going to offer. 6'7" wing. I think you think of him as Wieskamp light. If you can get anything from him next season in terms of 3-point shooting, that's where you need him the most, and that's where you know, he would help the most if he could shoot the three. I think Patrick McCaffrey, you know, he could go down and play the two. But right now, to me, he's here's how I kind of view it. There are a cluster of, let's say six big men, a lengthy big man, 6'9" or above. All right, 6'8", 6'9" or above. Keegan and Chris Murray, Patrick McCaffrey, Philip Robracha, and then you've got the kind of these two wild card youngsters, Riley Mulvey and Josh Ogundele. Now, that does not count Connor McCaffrey anywhere. Obviously, he started at the four last year, but more of a guard, really. And that's probably where his role fits more this year. I just don't see why you would, if you've got Patrick, Keegan, Chris, and Robracha, you know, there's a lot of front court girth there. And McCaffrey actually said today he thinks Riley Mulvey impacts the team this year. And this is a guy that reclassified, would have been a senior in high school this year. Really excited to work on his body. Let's see where that 6'11" frame is this season, you know, by fall. Yeah, he's just probably not in the mix for regular minutes, but who knows? Fran likes to play as young guys. He really does. He always has, and he always I think he that's just kind of the way he operates. If he sees a young guy with a lot of potential, he will maybe move him in there quicker ahead of a veteran, just like we saw with CJ Frederick, you know, kind of bumping Isaiah Moss out of the picture. So anyway, when you look at those four premier, I guess, post guys or strong candidates at the 3-4-5, Patrick, Keegan, Chris, Robracha, and I'm not saying Patrick's a stretch, okay? I'm saying more of a wing. But between those four guys, I think you can fill those 3-4-5 minutes pretty easily. You don't need a ton more from Sanford, Mulvey, Ogundele. Now, if one of those three guys, you know, powers into the picture, like, you know, a year ago at this time, we never would have expected Keegan Murray, you know, to be one of the best players on the team this past season. You know, so leave room for the unexpected. But I kind of like the idea of, okay, I still think the starting five would be Joe T, Bohannon, Patrick McCaffrey, Keegan Murray, and Robracha. But let's say Chris Murray and Connor. But let's say in the front court, Chris Murray is your first guy off the bench. Well, he could come in at the 14-minute mark, take over for Robracha maybe. You know, Peyton Sanford comes in and gives Patrick a blow, or Connor comes in and gives Patrick a blow. You know, there are options there, and then maybe Robracha comes back in and he takes out Keegan Murray, and then all of a sudden you've got Chris, Robracha, and Maybe Patrick's back. So you got those good three. I think you can just keep kind of alternating those guys, honestly. And you don't have to go that deep if they are as good as advertised. And Fran talked a lot today about Chris being a really impact player. So that's exciting for the Hawkeyes. And I do think I kind of buried one of the leads today. Patrick, Keegan, and Chris are ticketed to play in Switzerland this August. So that is a huge developmental advantage for the Hawkeyes. They'll be coached by Jim Boeheim, Larry Brown, and Frank Martin. That's exciting. That'll be an East Coast all-star team. They're going to be playing. They'll probably be split up all on three different teams. Fran did say that he might help out with one of the teams. We will see. COVID protocols do not have Switzerland open at this time, but they do expect it to be open by August. So that is the plan, and if it doesn't work out there, they're going to go to England. So good experience coming up for those guys, and then they'll come back for the school year. And I think this team's going to be – I don't know. We'll see. I think this team's going to be a pretty good place. I'm not going to say NCAA tournament place just yet, but I think the fact that you lose so many starters, again, moving on without Wieskamp in this conversation, open the door for him just in case. But I think this team has – a good bit of potential. Other little bullet points out of today. Let me pull up my notes, actually, just so I don't forget anything. But one of the things a question I get all the time is, hey, will you play in one of those holiday tournaments? It does not sound like Iowa's going to play afar on that front this year. They're going to kind of do what they did last year and play a more low-key home event at Carver. Yeah, I don't blame them. Get a few more gates, ticket gates at home. Season ticket sales are up for students already. 1,100 season tickets sold. A lot of that's going to be incoming freshmen. Those often are purchased by new students, so that's exciting. That's ahead of 2019 levels already. So they're going to have those home games. They'll probably be in the Big East Challenge. They'll be in the ACC Challenge, of course. The Gavitt games, the Big East thing. And then you got Iowa State. So there's some non-conference teeth there. It might be a more it might be a lighter non-conference schedule than we've seen Iowa play in recent years. Iowa obviously had some tough ones the last couple of years intentionally because they had a veteran team. But this year, I think Fran's okay with it, with a young and unproven team, I guess, kind of going through that non-conference schedule, knowing there might be, you want to have some opportunities to let these guys make mistakes and still win ball games. So I don't mind that at this point. Let's see what the schedule actually looks like. But I think that there is there's a little more info there on the schedule. On Wieskamp, he's out training in Vegas, waiting for that combine invite, which I think will come. Nothing really groundbreaking on Rabracha. We were told at the beginning of the press conference that he would not take questions on CJ Frederick, so none were really asked directly. I am going to have Fran on our radio show Wednesday night, so that'll be a great opportunity to hopefully delve into some of these topics a little deeper. Maybe we'll talk about stuff surrounding the Frederick topic, but it's clear that he doesn't want to talk about it at all, and he never has. I remembered when I went back to write my story today, I said, yeah, he did make one sentence statement, but I looked back because I didn't remember what it said. I forgot it was this plane, but it was that Iowa coach Fran McCaffrey announced on Monday that CJ Frederick has entered the transfer portal. So that's all that we've heard from Fran publicly on that, and probably all we ever will, honestly, unless he just, unless he wants to write a book someday. But he's not going there. Trying to see what else we got here. Yeah, I think that's it. I'm sorry, my word crashed. So, whatever. On the fly, we'll deal with it. Any more basketball questions? Let me see. I sent it to my text group. Had one on Riley Mulvey. How much do I think he'll play? I'm going to say I thought initially he would redshirt. And again, remember, going into this year, you're going to see you can't have that free year anymore. And it's not like football either. Once you play, you play. So there will be redshirt decisions that will have to be made like they were in the past for basketball. So I kind of thought he might be a redshirt candidate. But it kind of sounds like he's going to play. So why not? These guys, Iowa's going to lose a bunch of guys after this season, more than likely. They'll definitely lose Bohannon. He can't come back for a seventh year, sorry to say. I think Rebraccia is a wild card because he's a grad transfer. We don't know if he'll use both years. You know, using both would mean he'd use the free year. So I think in his mind, probably he's got one. Maybe you think you lose Bohannon, you lose Rebraccia, you lose Connor McCaffrey, more than likely, unless he comes back for a sixth free year, but I kind of don't see that happening. And then, how about Keegan Murray? You might lose him, you might lose the transfer. So I think the idea there is, let's get Riley Mulvey some experience, especially with a non-conference schedule, and let's see what he can do with it. He's got some nice skills under the basket. So we'll see. That's a good question. See if there's anything. Someone asked about Joe Toussaint and slipping with his shoes. But let's just get him healthy first and we can talk about slipping. I talked enough about slipping cleats in the Rose Bowl in 2015. All right, let's move on to football. Good stuff. Thanks for bearing with me there. 22 minutes on basketball. What the heck? All right, so my interview with Gary Barta last week. We didn't get into it really at all in Hawk Central Radio this week. Hopefully you read my interview with Barta. That was kind of lucky. I had been just asking, hey, when can we talk about what's going on this season? Kind of was ready to talk finally on Friday. And it was great to. I got about 30 plus minutes with him. Most of it on the record, some stuff off, but it was a good conversation and kind of get to break some news, about the Kinnick Stadium being full go, 100% capacity is the plan. And if you want to wear, if you're vaccinated, you don't have to wear a mask. If you aren't, please wear one. That's kind of the message from the university. But as far as the rest of the stuff that we talked about goes, Penn State really sounds like it's going to be a night game. He can't quite go there yet, but the fact that it's on Fox or FS1 and Iowa has hosted Penn State in night games the last three times, or maybe it was four, I think. The last four times have been 6:30 or later at Kinnick. And so I thought the 08 game was too, but it was actually an afternoon game that ended under the lights. So really all the Penn State Iowa night games or games have had that night feel. It just feels right, So anyway, kind of that's part of the schedule, I think, as well. And then earlier in the week, the kickoff times were revealed, for 7 of the 12 games. And let's go over some of those now, as well as kind of how this schedule shapes up. 2:30 out of the gate. Indiana at home. I like that spot for the Hawkeyes early, to get them at home. Certainly the Hoosiers should not sneak up on Iowa as a team that did very well last year. And frankly, I think it could kind of feel like a little bit of a prove it spot for the Hawkeyes. I think both teams were sort of the second best teams in their division last year. I mean, arguably Iowa was the best in the West, but they couldn't beat Northwestern, so they weren't. But I think Iowa would have liked that crossover, matchup in Champions Week against Indiana rather than Michigan. But that did not happen because of Indiana-Purdue. And then, of course, I don't think that one actually happened either. So that'll be a long time coming. I think just playing in front of fans. And then, honestly, Indiana playing in front of road fans could be a factor as well. You know, they got to go through last season playing, you know, in empty stadiums like, you know, didn't have to face hostile road crowds. That's a big deal for a program like Indiana that's not used to experiencing a ton of success. You know, they played at Ohio State. They played at Michigan State. They played at Wisconsin last year. I mean, how much different might have those outcomes been if there were fans? So, yeah, that's something to consider. I kind of like that. And then what about the Iowa State game? You know, I like the fact that that's 2:30. I think that's good for the people in the state of Iowa, just because you can get there, you can get out all in one day. Tailgating there is nuts. It's going to start early, but that's good. And then, I don't know. I certainly at this point, I think I would probably lean Iowa State, but man, it's hard to know. Until you kind of see what Petrus has got to offer. To me, that's kind of the wild card of the season ahead. Kent State, also 2:30 the next week. Obviously, you like 2:30 games. Colorado State, TBA the next week. Then how about this? The Friday night game at Maryland, 8 o'clock Eastern. That's just going to be such a interesting feel. I don't know what to expect there. I don't know how, you know, Maryland fans, from my experience, are pretty nuts. So if they get off to a good start, let's see what kind of schedule that Maryland's got out of the gate here. Because I think that might set the tone for how vibrant this game is. Yeah, they could, it'll be interesting. They could be 4-0. They very well could be. The first game of their season probably is hosting West Virginia. You would think, Mountaineers were, I think, let me check before I speak to it, but they were not that awesome last year. Oh, great. So now I timed out on my internet as I went to click on that. The Mountaineers, that's the problem. You can't throw it to somebody. They were 6-4 last year, so they were not horrible. They did lose to Iowa State 42-6. That's probably what I was thinking about. So it's, if they beat them, then Maryland has, at Illinois is, their only other kind of like tough game in there. And that's, I mean, arguably tough. So they host West Virginia, host Howard at Illinois on Friday night. So will kind of get acclimated Friday night. And then they play Kent State the week after Iowa plays Kent State. So that's interesting. And then they play Iowa before going to Ohio State. So you might see a 4-0 Maryland team on that Friday night. So that would be very interesting to see what that atmosphere might be like. It's not like Iowa's going to go in there against a 2-8 Maryland team like you might have thought in past years or something like that. Maryland had some teeth last year. They got Tua's brother at QB. That could be a tough game. For the Hawkeyes, you know, any game on the road is tough in the Big Ten, but Friday night on the road could be dicey. And then here a couple other things on the schedule I wanted to point out. So Penn State, will they come to town? How will they come to town? The previous week they face Indiana. This will be interesting because what will Penn State's record be coming to Kinnick? Could we see a desperate team come into Kinnick Stadium? They've opened the season at Wisconsin. That's a tough ask. Oh, man. Week 3, host Auburn. Week 5, host Indiana. Revenge game there. You would think they kind of get well. But that might be a case where Penn State gets pretty up for that Indiana game, given what happened last year. And then they got to travel to Iowa City. So I kind of like that spot. Iowa gets that extra day rest there. I kind of like that. And look, circling other big games on the calendar. Okay, at Wisconsin. Of all the games on the schedule, probably the biggest one of the season. Wisconsin, to me, solidified. Mark Morehouse put it well. Solidified itself as division favorite probably this week, picking up Clemson running back transfer Ches Malushi. He was the backup to Travis Etienne at Clemson, and now becomes a featured guy in Madison. So between him and Jalen Berger, that kind of answers one of Wisconsin's biggest question marks on this roster. So to me, it's just a matter of does Graham Mertz kind of regain the form that he had last year early in the season before he got COVID and that shoulder injury? If he does, I really like Wisconsin's chances to beat Iowa, but Iowa has that extra week to prepare. So they get, after Penn State, they get Purdue in a 2:30 game for homecoming, then a week off. Meanwhile, Wisconsin, the week before, plays at Purdue. So they're going to have a frisky divisional game. And Wisconsin already will have played Penn State, Notre Dame, and Michigan, not to mention road trips to Illinois and Purdue, and kind of a weird middle-of-the-season game against Army. So this is an interesting schedule for Wisconsin. And frankly, as you look at their schedule, the Iowa game could be, we know it could be a division title deal in the West, but that could be one of their last real tough games of the season, because then it's Rutgers, Northwestern, Nebraska, and Minnesota, and you have to like Wisconsin's chances in all those. So certainly kind of a good spot there, I think, for Iowa to at least make a stand and make a case for the Big Ten West. And then you look at Northwestern the next week. So, the key to the season is Iowa, going back-to-back in those two games. Maybe they could afford to lose one. Maybe. But they would certainly can't afford to lose both. And Northwestern, the previous week, plays Minnesota at home. That's a rivalry West game. The following week plays at Wisconsin. So they don't hit Iowa in necessarily the best spot either. So kind of how the schedule lays out, I sort of like it. I sort of like how the schedule plays out for the Hawkeyes. And then think about this. Last game of the season against Nebraska, at Nebraska. Kind of tough, obviously. But here are the two games that Nebraska has leading into the Iowa game. Ohio State at Nebraska. Then there is an off week, but then at Wisconsin. So their schedule finishes Ohio State, at Wisconsin, Iowa. So that's a tough finish for Scott Frost's team. You wonder where they are at that point. So that's kind of my quick run through on what we know about the schedule so far. Nebraska game will be a 12:30 Central Time start. And the only weird one is Wisconsin will be an 11 a.m. start. So those are the seven game times we know. The first three, Purdue, Wisconsin, Nebraska, and Maryland. So there you have it. What else? Let's see if I have any other questions. If not, I will. How many will Iowa football sign this summer? When I talked to Tyler Barnes the other day, or last couple weeks ago, I guess it's been now, he thought maybe in that 18 to 20 range. The thing is that Iowa still needs to deal with the fact that some of these, because of that COVID year, guys can elect to come back. And unlike this year, where they can go over 85, future years, they cannot go over 85. So like this year, Iowa has four guys electing to use their super senior year. I'll see if I can come up with them off the top of my head. Van Valkenburg, Shudak, Spiewak, and Hankins. Yeah. So those four guys elected to come back and use that unexpectedly. So Iowa can go over to 89 because of that. But if, let's say, a Kyler Schott or somebody or whoever comes back for an additional year that maybe you don't expect, you got to fit him in. You got to fit him in that next year. So that's why you can't oversign in recruiting classes. Good question, though. So we'll see. What happens on the recruiting front? Iowa picked up its first one of the this June, crazy June that we thought that we would see the other night. Wisconsin offensive lineman who had an offer from Penn State, and 6'7" kid projects at tackle. So, hey, Iowa collecting an offensive lineman. What, imagine that. Good stuff. Thanks for tuning in on this subscriber edition of the Hawk Central podcast. Thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing. I know it's been a while on the subscriber front. I did tweet out our new, about a week ago, maybe it was a week ago, to the announcement of our new hire, our new Mark Emmert. He will be joining us, Kennington Smith. He will be joining us in a couple weeks. So eventually I'll have a sidekick on these podcasts and on the radio show and in reporting. That's where I need it the most because I'm trying to do it all. And I'm really excited for vacations this summer. But it's also been fun to kind of be a part of all these stories as well. So anyway, thank you for following. Thank you for subscribing. Thank you for listening. I appreciate each and every one of you every week. And stay tuned. More news to come all summer long. Take care.